It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And do you think Joe Biden's too old to be president? Do you believe Donald Trump's unwell and unable to serve as commander in chief? What about Hillary Clinton 8 years ago? Or John McCain 16 years ago? Or Bob Dole before that? Shall I go on? Accusations of illness have become such a pervasive part of political campaigns that we may not even notice the role they play or the ramifications they have. So I'll ask you, have you noticed? Your questions and comments are welcome here throughout this hour. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org as well anytime. Our guest is Lisa Dietrich, an author and professor of women's, gender, and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. Lisa's new book, Illness, Politics, and Hashtag Activism, will be published by the University of Minnesota Press in May. And Lisa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so you've spent decades exploring how topics like health activism, disability, and illness intersect with our politics. And let's just start with a big grand question here. Why is illness so central to American politics?
Illness is one of these things that we, of course, all experience. And so it's a universal experience. And one of the things that we're seeing in relation to politics is the way, and this is why I use the term illness politics, because I want to talk about how it's actually influencing and affecting our politics. So we all experience illness, but it's also being used politically. And so we've seen this, especially in the last couple of elections, and I try to look at how illness is used politically through on social media, specifically by looking at hashtags and as a sort of portal through which to analyze illness politics.
And Lisa, with all your research in medicine, philosophy, what made you decide to dive into illness in politics?
Yeah. My background, my training is actually in gender studies, but I've always been sort of fascinated by illness and how it figures in American political life. And so I've always looked at one of the first things that I was interested in was this sort of rise in people writing memoirs about their experiences of illness. And so my first book is called Treatments, and it was about how people write about and try to understand and come to understand their own experiences of illness. And I was really interested in how these sort of narratives about illness try to kind of figure out a way to describe the symptoms that people are experiencing. But then there's something bigger going on too, where people are trying to understand illness as a sort of category that intersects with other experiences and other categories like race, gender, class, and sexuality. So that was the beginning. I mean, part of it was just seeing these books and seeing that people were writing, trying to kind of come to terms with their own experiences of illness. But I was also very interested in, and this kind of goes back to the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and I was very interested in how people politicized illness and sort of to bring about social change around how we treat, how the government supports or not particular illnesses, funds research for illnesses, et cetera. So I saw this as a kind of experience that everybody can kind of relate to. We all know what it means to be ill,
right?
I mean, it's universal, truly. Although it's not that everybody experiences it the same, but it is universal. And so I wanted to look at that and see actually how that experience is written about, talked about, and politicized.
And what I found interesting, Lisa, is how solid of a case you make that this is just part of our American politics and the, how far back this goes. But at the same time, you wouldn't necessarily think of it. It didn't come top of mind to me as a voter, as somebody who, you know, follows politics. I didn't stop to think about it until you said it. We use illness as a way to, well, weaponize weakness in American politics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is what I think. And I do think there's a kind of tie to what we're seeing is with social media, we can kind of see that more effectively used. Perhaps it is an old tactic. It's not new at all. And I sort of first became interested in it in relation to JFK's Addison's disease. So the 1960 election, the Nixon was a very close election, and the Nixon campaign really were trying. They knew something was up with JFK in terms of that he had this sort of chronic condition, but they didn't really have evidence, and the Kennedy never sort of talked about this, right? So kept it secret. And so there was an attempt to kind of utilize that against Kennedy, but it really wasn't, they didn't do that. And it was a very close election. Kennedy, of course, won. And then what we discovered later after his assassination, not actually until 1992, was did we finally learn from his autopsy that he had Addison's disease and that his adrenal glands just simply weren't functioning. So the question becomes, so there's an example of somebody who had an illness, a chronic condition, which was stigmatized. This is kind of one of the important things, is that we stigmatize many illnesses. So in that sense, Kennedy did want to keep this quiet, because it would have had an impact on how voters saw him. Although, did it have an impact in terms of how he governed or what type of leader he was? That becomes one of the questions. But so there's a long history of this. But now what we see is a kind of attempt to politicize it more, to sort of question people's capacity to lead because of certain illnesses. Or in the case we're seeing right now, age, right? So this is what I'm kind of interested in, how people get sick and how does that impact them? Does that prevent them from leading? I don't think so. So why is it that this is being used to kind of question people's capacity to lead?
Lisa Dietrich, our guest. She is the author and a professor at Stony Brook University. Her upcoming book, Illness Politics and Hashtag Activism. One thing they didn't have back in 1960 was social media, and I wonder how things would have been different if they did, Lisa. You write about hashtags that were popular during the 2016 presidential election, including hashtag sick Hillary and hashtag Trump is not well. You also reference this YouTube video by a Trump opposition group called the Lincoln Project that summarizes the sentiment behind the Trump is not well hashtag.
Something's wrong with Donald Trump. He's shaky, weak, trouble speaking, trouble walking. The most powerful office in the world needs more than a weak, unfit, shaky president. Trump doesn't have the strength to lead, nor the character to admit it. We're not doctors, but we're not blind. It's time we talk about this. Trump is not well.
And Lisa, you write about how illness is used as a metaphor for being unfit to serve in public office. How do Trump opponents like the Lincoln Project, which have gone forward now with a new YouTube video called Trump's Is Still Not Well, how do they use this, utilize this as illness as a metaphor?
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't listened to that clip in a while, and boy, the voice, right? You're really led to believe, you have to kind of think about how that's working on you. The voice, and we're not seeing image because we're on radio, but the images that are tied in with the words, with the what the person is saying about Trump. Yeah, I think the so I do. I look at hashtags from 2016 and also 2020, and first I begin with sick Hillary, hashtag sick Hillary, which was started by right wing activist Mike Cernovich, and which was sort of meant to show that Hillary had some sort of condition in her brain, something was wrong. And then, of course, this is one of, I call this one of Trump's illness politics, is to me one of Trump's signature tactics. He's very good at sort of showcasing the weaknesses of his opponents. And he does a good job of kind of imitating even, when Hillary Clinton collapsed at the 9/11 ceremonies in New York, Trump then, right away started sort of imitating her collapse on stage at his rallies. So Trump is very good at illness politics, I would say.
Yeah, and I would like to dig into this a little bit more with our guest, Lisa Dietrich. She is the author of a new book on illness and politics, also a professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. Your questions and comments are welcome here throughout the hour, 1-800-642-1234. Have you stopped to think about how illness is used as a metaphor for politicians to be unfit for office? It seems perhaps... I had not, so I'd be interested in what you had to think, what you think about it. 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So what was this purpose of the hashtag Sick Hillary during the presidential race of 2020? It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Raven, and we're exploring the nexus of health and politics with our guest, Lisa Dietrich, author and professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University. Her upcoming book, Illness, Politics, and Hashtag Activism. And your invitation to join us is at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And Lisa, from your book, Illness, Politics, and Hashtag Activism, you say this hashtag Sick Hillary was used to counter Clinton's serious messages about Donald Trump and white supremacy. Was it effective? Did it work?
Yeah, I think it did work. I think what was kind of happening was an attempt to, counter her message and also her as a candidate, somebody who we would see as a leader. So I think it's one of the things that I say is that illness politics sort of intersects with racial, sexual, and class politics, and also sometimes kind of stands in for those politics. So Sick Hillary became this way that we had to speculate about what was wrong with Clinton. And the premise was that something was wrong and it was in her brain, but we didn't really know what it was. And so the rampant speculation is kind of part of the politics that, it doesn't matter if we're kind of thinking, oh, maybe it's Parkinson's, maybe it's epilepsy, all these different possibilities kind of allow the ideas to circulate more.
The power of the secret illness, and it goes all the way back to, as you mentioned, JFK in 1960.
Yeah, exactly. The power of the secret illness is the right way to put it, because we're gonna what happens with illness. One of the things in my long studying of illness and what happens with illness is that it gets linked to moral. It's illness is not seen just as a biological condition, but we often make moral judgments based on illness, and so we have a tendency, unfortunately, to kind of blame the victim of illness, to suggest that they're somehow responsible for their illness. And although I think we see this a little less now, I still think it's operating. And so it can be used to operate politically. And so there was, Trump was basically trying to say, you can't trust Hillary Clinton. And, there's the Clintons and this kind of denigration of their, of whether we should trust them or not. There's a long history of that. And so he was sort of utilizing that. But what I look at with Trump is not well in 2020 is that, as I say in the book, Trump was kind of hoist on his ableist petard. He was basically, the illness politics that he himself had used were used against him by the Lincoln Project. Yeah. And we're seeing it right now. Trump is not well, is still circulating on social media, that hashtag. And as you said, Trump is still not well is now a new hashtag. So we're kind of using Trump's tactics again, or certain people are using Trump's tactics against him.
But what about our role in this as an informed electorate? And I'd go back to the story, and it gets a lot of attention, and you talk about it in Illness Politics and hashtag activism of Donald Trump at a rally openly mocking a news reporter with a disability. It got a lot of attention, but as you point out, not as much attention seemed to be paid to the actual policies that the candidate was offering regarding people with disabilities, accessibility, and equity.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's one of the main points that I'm trying to make is that, so Trump, we know this image. I think most of your listeners will know the image of Trump mocking disabled reporter Serge Kovalevsky. And what, you know, I talk about some polls that showed at that time, American people did not like that. Okay. So they really genuinely didn't like that he, for the most part, that he imitated a disabled person. Now, that doesn't quite get at what they might be enjoying in watching him, you know, at his rallies and his supporters, what they might enjoy about that he sort of does that kind of thing that we think is improper, right?
Bad behavior.
Yeah, bad behavior, that we sort of value his bad behavior in some ways. I think there is a way that he's expressing something that people want expressed. And so I think that was sort of operating. But what happens is, so we see that. That's in the Trump is not well video from the Lincoln Project. They show that image of him imitating Serge Kovalevsky. But what disabled activists at that time said and called for was not to kind of focus on that, not to focus on his bad behavior, but to actually focus on his policies, which were not good for disabled people. And so his attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, to cut Medicaid, this is what we need to focus on rather than his bullying bad behavior. And that's what I kind of also try to focus on in the book, is to shift from this sort of electoral politics that's happening with a slogan like, with a hashtag like Trump is not well, to disability activism that's focused on policy.
And that's the whole second half of your upcoming book. And it's interesting that how this is used by campaigns, this hashtag activism and illness politics used by campaigns to try to get you to vote for your candidate or the other candidate. But at the same time, this hashtag activism and illness politics is being employed by people with disabilities to try to move what has been a marginalized agenda front and center in front of the people. I think the reason we keep doing it, the reason you take this all the way back to 1960, Lisa, is because it works. It's effective.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so I do want to look at both the attempts to kind of suggest people are sort of don't have a certain capacity to lead. So that's the critique of that use of hashtags to kind of challenge people's fitness for office. But then I also want to turn and look at the importance of disability, illness and disability activism. And so the second half of the book looks at very specific work by and very kind of varied work by disability activists to kind of change the conversation about disability. Away from this kind of question about fitness, right, that is sort of undermining and emphasizes sort of weakness, to something that sort of says, why not kind of create a world in which everyone can participate, in which more people can participate. So that's, I'm really interested in that sort of activism that's looking to create, that has a different vision of community and the world and justice, I think.
Yeah, but it's activism that some have criticized as being not actually active, being virtual and not real. But at the same time, for some people with disabilities, it may be the most action they can make. And you make a case in your book that these actions have made a difference in our politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Lisa, I gotta take a break here for news. I apologize, but our conversation is going to continue through the rest of this hour because we've got a lot left to get to, including, as you mentioned, the second half of your book, which is about how activists can employ these same tools to make a difference from their perspective, and how hashtag activism actually has moved the needle in our American politics. We invite you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lisa Dietrich, our guest, her upcoming book, Illness Politics and Hashtag Activism. You can also email us ideas at WPR.org. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And show me what democracy looks like. How does online political organizing translate into real fundamental change? Answering the question of what constitutes real activism has been at the forefront of our guests' decades of work. This is what democracy looks like. Lisa Dietrich is an author and professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. Lisa's upcoming book is called Illness Politics and Hashtag Activism. And we invite you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. And Lisa, let's talk about real activism here, as the second half of your book has to do with hashtag activism and how people with disabilities have made a difference in the disability movement and our politics for all of us. So in examining real activism, what for you in researching this would qualify?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's a long kind of history of sort of denigrating what's called hashtag activism. So this idea that folks on social media are using hashtags to promote certain politics, and that's not actually real politics. That's not getting out there in the street, you know, occupying public space, marching, being arrested, et cetera. So what I kind of want us to look at what we think of when we think of the figure of the activist. And we generally think of a sort of person out in public, right? And making a change through the kind of showing the urgency of their cause. And I think we need to sort of shift that a little bit and kind of understand that there are some people who are less able to sort of be in the public sphere, but that doesn't mean that they can't do activism and be activists. So I'm sort of challenging this idea of what we take to be an activist, and also the kind of habit of denigrating the hashtag activism, because what I discover through looking at various disability oriented hashtags, like adapt and resist and crip the vote, and even long COVID,
yeah,
is also an important one, is that actually that is functioning to shift political life in the U.S. And so what we see is a kind of interesting combination where in the case of adapt and resist, your listeners will probably recall some of these images, but the disability rights and justice group ADAPT protested on Capitol Hill in 2017, basically did a die-in at Senator McConnell's office, and they were arrested. So we have these images, both still images and also video, of them being, for example, removed from their wheelchairs to be arrested. So I include in the book an image of the ADAPT activist Stephanie Woodward being carried out by these kind of burly Capitol guards, police officers. But you know, one of the things that I'm sort of showing is that she is an activist. She knows what she's doing, and she was actually sort of wanting that media publicity to convey the importance of Medicaid for disabled people. So she was kind of putting her body on the line to show the American public what Medicaid meant for disabled people like her. So that's direct action politics. That's disabled people doing direct action politics. And I kind of argue that they're able to sort of use their vulnerability that we can kind of see as a tactic to make people understand what this means to them. But I also look at more exclusively online activism, and I'm trying to say that's important, that online activism around that kind of circulates around hashtags creates community and has a very real impact on our politics.
But as you write in your book, and with a question that I'm left with, is kind of profound. How do you protest when the very act is a dire threat to what little ability you have left? And it stops and make you think.
I mean, and what I look at there is activists who have long COVID and also ME CFS, myelogic encephalomyelitis, or chronic fatigue syndrome. And those folks have been protesting in public. They do a regular protest called hashtag Millions Missing that's usually combines a public element. So they protested several months ago in front of the White House. But there's also online components to their activism. And, you know, what they're actually doing is sort of, yes, showing us again how important this is, this issue is for them. And they want the sort of government to take seriously and also to better fund research for ME and CFS and long COVID. And also they're trying to sort of counteract the fact that many people sort of don't believe, or you know, they encounter doctors who are disbelieving of these chronic conditions, and so they're sort of trying to counteract that. And one of the ways that they're showing that is by putting their vulnerable bodies in public. And so, the question of whether how they succeed or not is important and challenges what we take activism to be, I think. And I think this is one of the more sort of important points of my book that is to really show that disabled people are capable of engaging in politics. They are, and they do. And it's important that we kind of heed what they're trying to struggle to bring about.
We're talking about the new book, Illness Politics and Hashtag Activism, with our guest author, Lisa Dietrich, professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions or experiences, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Lisa, I'd be curious to know from you what you see as the limits to social media activism, or for that matter, when does social media become inadequate to meet the needs of activists?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that the book tries to show is that there's several things going on social media. There is the use of social media to kind of create illness politics that is stigmatizing and sort of suggesting that certain people are not capable of leading. And I think there's the kind of danger of, I talk about a practice I call diagnosing by GIF or GIF, where we take a very short clip, and this is what happens in the Trump Is Not Well video. A short clip in Trump Is Not Well, we see Trump apparently not being able to drink water, and he has to use two hands, right? It's a 3-second clip of him having difficulty drinking water at a speech at the military academy. So, you know, my point is, what is that showing? Why are people saying that that shows something about his incapability? And they also show him kind of having difficulty walking down a ramp. So And I think this is going to get worse with, this is getting worse with AI, because of course, not only are we taking little clips, but we're also now creating clips that supposedly showcase somebody's problems. And we saw this with a video of Nancy Pelosi apparently slurring her words, and then we learned that, well, no, the video was slowed down and so manipulated. So the problem of manipulation, and I do worry a lot about that, especially in the coming election. I think we're seeing the way that social media does manipulate people. And so one of the points of the book is to try to just get people to think about this and how this is being used politically, to just simply say, okay, what's going on politically here, and how can we sort of assess what's going on politically?
I'm curious about the medium itself too, specifically the ownership. Have you seen changes with Elon Musk's X compared to the old Twitter? Are there challenges that activists face online when it comes to engaging with through Instagram or the Facebook universe?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I there are lots of changes on Musk's X. And you know, Twitter was never perfect, and none of these social media platforms are perfect at all. But I think what we saw, there were some sort of immediate changes. I mean, Musk immediately fired the accessibility group, so people that were trying to sort of work to make the platform more accessible, he fired that group. I don't think there's a replacement group. And we're also seeing on, and so I think lots of disabled people who use, there's a whole disabled Twitter community, people using Twitter to create community. And I think there have been people who have felt they need to leave. And that the way it's sort of operating now, what's sort of being amplified or not, is sort of questionable. So, I mean, I think that's one of the hardest things, is that you, what you saw was, and I try to show this especially through the group Crip the Vote, who began sort of using the hashtag Crip the Vote, in 2016, to kind of create, generate conversations about disability and how disability was so sort of central to all different topics. And if we sort of take a disability perspective, then we really have an interesting approach to social and political life. And I argue that they had a huge impact. I kind of argue that they possibly, you know, helped in terms of Fetterman's election, Senator Fetterman's election. I think there was an impact because I think the conversation had shifted, and we saw people joining Crip the Vote Twitter chats, like Senator Warren, Senator Mayor Buttigieg, and we sort of saw that this convert that people were realizing that disability is an important part of this conversation. So I think that had an impact on, and also it made people sort of understand what ableism is and how it works. And so I think that had an impact on Fetterman and his campaign and how they decided to handle his stroke. I think he is a sort of really interesting example of someone who quite effectively counteracted stigma and ableism. I do kind of think that he was able to do that because there's something about who he was that was able to actually show that vulnerability and generate a sort of somewhat positive response to his public display of vulnerability.
Lisa Dietrich, author of a new book on illness politics and the professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. She stays with us, but we're running out of time this hour, so we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn on the Ideas Network, and our guest this hour has been talking about the intersectionality of activism, our politics, and people with disabilities. Lisa Dietrich, the author of the new book, Illness, Politics, and Hashtag Activism, and a professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. And you're welcome to join us before our hour is out at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And I want to ask Lisa about the other aspects of your research here and how they play into illness, politics, and hashtag activism. What role does race and gender play when it comes to activism and people with disabilities and the effectiveness in our politics?
Yeah, I think they all intersect. I mean, this is one of the sort of points of this concept of intersectionality, that gender, race, class, and I would add illness and disability intersect in terms of our experience of the world and how politics operate. So that's really what I'm interested in studying. So, you know, one thing that people are aware of is, you know, in the last chapter, I look at long COVID. And one of the things that people have sort of talked about in relation to long COVID and other illnesses that we don't fully understand biologically is that this sort of process of medical gaslighting, where people are not necessarily believed when they try to tell their doctor what they're experiencing in their bodies, they're not necessarily believed, or there's a way that the doctor might respond with the thought that it's psychological or stress related rather than biological. So there's a sort of denial of people's authority in their own experience of their body. And what we see is that that is very much about gender, and it's about race, that the people who are less likely to be believed are women, and especially women of color. So I try to look at that, how that is sort of operating and the problem of that. So in the last chapter, I talk about a short film that made by the Washington Post about Cynthia Adenig, who is a person who has long COVID. And she basically shows us that she, you know, her experiences of her symptoms were not taken seriously. And in fact, not only not taken seriously, but not believed. And so one of the things that would happen to her when she would go to the hospital was that she would be drug tested. And so she's like many people with long COVID, connected to other people with long COVID online. So this becomes a resource for them, and also a place of community building. And she connects with a woman who is a white woman who says, well, you know, and they basically have very similar experiences of symptoms with long COVID, but their experience of medicine is a little bit different. And the woman who she communicates with says, I've never been drug tested. And she says, the only difference between you and me is that I can see is that I'm white and you're black. And so kind of really thinking about how race, class, gender, disability kind of impacts our experience of healthcare is one of the key things that I want to sort of communicate with the concept of illness politics.
Lisa Dietrich, our guest from Stony Brook University, with the upcoming book, Illness, Politics, and Hashtag Activism. And you want this book to serve as a guidebook for other activists who are looking to find models that are effective in making a difference in their community and helping to solve some of the problems that their community faces. And we are we're facing another presidential election this year, campaigns already well underway. Lisa, what's your advice for activists involved in this year's elections?
Well, my advice would be to really show how healthcare is sort of a central issue in our election, and how disability is a central issue in our election. A couple of examples, of course. I mean, So, you know, abortion is a healthcare issue, right? So abortion is healthcare is a hashtag people have used. So, you know, how does that sort of connect with other healthcare issues? Also, I would say that, you know, what's happening in Gaza right now is about illness politics as well, and health and disability. What we see there is what we would call a mass disabling event. We're sort of creating conditions for more illness and disability and death as well. So I think it's helpful. A disability perspective helps us really see the kind of fund, I would say that see, you know, vulnerability as a sort of fundamental human condition, but also kind of really consider how we can understand ourselves as interdependent, right? This is a kind of something you learn from disability justice work, that we are interdependent. We're not independent of each other. And so I really want us to kind of think about a vision of where we're sort of regarding, not disregarding, our fellow people, and thinking about how we can kind of create a world that helps people rather than is kind of stigmatizing and also disabling.
Lisa, we got about a minute left, but if you're not an activist and just an engaged voter heading towards November, you mentioned the vulnerability as a human condition, but there are also the politics of weaponizing weakness among other candidates. How should I, as a voter, move forward with understanding this year's election? What should I look for?
Well, I know that, you know, age has become a kind of there's a way that people have worried about age, especially in relation to President Biden, and also in relation to former President Trump. I think but I think, you know, it's very simplistic to just say that age equals incapacity, or that we become increasingly incapacitated with age. So I would just get people to sort of understand the complexity of issues, the complexity of what we're capable of or not. And my main point that I want to communicate is that we have contrasting visions of the world. And the vision that I think is really important to emphasize is our shared humanity, is our interdependence. And so I want to kind of enact that through politics.
And thank you for doing it. And thank you for joining us this morning, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa Dietrich's an author and professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at Stony Brook University in New York. Look for her upcoming book, Illness Politics and Hashtag Activism, from the University of Minnesota Press in May. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.